Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Hero in Darkness by Timothy Ellis, narrated by Graham Halstead. 1.
Down jump, yelled Jane suddenly. Damn, it's big.
I'd been caught flat-footed, looking back and chatting with Aileen as we tried to keep each other's spirits up. We'd been camped out at the death jump point for 2 weeks now, and just about everyone was going stir-crazy. I hastily swiveled my chair forward, grasped the flight controls, jerked the triggers, and held them down. Only then did I register just how big what was coming at us was. The entire view screen was immediately filled with something monstrous. I yanked the speed control into full reverse, and Big Mother started to move backwards. But it was a fraction of our full forward speed, and we were never going to escape. The full broadside of every gun and missile which could point forward hit the massive shape bearing down on us, and there was major damage to its hull, with bits breaking off and going in all directions.
Not possible, yelled Dick.
There seemed to be a big hole in the front of whatever it was, but underneath was more of the same. The destroyer guns and missile launchers fired again with the same result. I thought I'd had a pretty good idea of how the darkness was crossing the death system, but never in my most deluded imaginings could I have come up with what they had used. And I not only had no idea what it was, I had no time to even think about it. The cruiser guns fired again with a third round of missiles, but it was too late. Thousands of beams of light shot out from the behemoth bearing down on us, and our shields went down 50% in one hit.
Holy shit, yelled Jane, looking terrified for the first time I'd ever seen. That was more than 100,000 guns.
There simply wasn't any point in reacting to something so ridiculous. The battleship guns and missiles fired again, and this time it was point-blank range. We did serious damage to the behemoth, but most of the debris impacted against our shields, and they went down to 20%. There was nowhere to go. The behemoth smashed into us, the shields went down, the secondary shields went down, and the front end of Big Mother embedded itself deep inside the other vessel.
Sorry, John, said 13 beside me. Time to go.
He vanished. I looked around the bridge, seeing the stark terror in everyone's eyes, and for one last moment locked my eyes on Aileen. The darkness took us. 2. Way to go, my hunter son. You'll ascend when you get done. You don't have the time to rest. Better cry right now. There's no point to all the noise and confusion. Just to understand this all is illusion. Wipe away your fears of fighting. Death's a step away. Though you think you see, your eyes are deceiving. Though you act for all, you still aren't believing. You hear our voices when we need you. You can hear us say, way to go, my hunter son. You'll ascend when you get done. You don't have the time to rest. Better cry right now. There was the sound of a needle being pushed roughly over the grooves of a vinyl record, and the song ended abruptly. It sounded a bit like fingernails down a chalkboard. I flinched. I glared at Jane as I recalled the sound came from Allie McBeal, and realized she was telling me without words she didn't like my creation. I'd spent days on getting a rewording which worked. I'd had the song on the brain for 6 months now, and being close to out of my gourd in frustration and worry, I'd kept myself busy by editing the song. I thought I'd done a pretty good job, especially since it was my first attempt at audio editing. I looked around the bridge. They were still cringing. For a moment I thought it was because of the last sound, but I realized most of them didn't know what a vinyl record was, let alone what the sound had been or even what a chalkboard was. They were cringing from the song itself. It wasn't that bad, I said. Jane saved anyone from answering.
Contact. Death jump point. Damn, it's big.
And so it begins. She had everyone's attention immediately. We'd been sitting here in the pestilence system for 2 weeks waiting for this very moment, and when it occurred we'd all been caught flat-footed. My fault, I'd been trying to cheer everyone up. Well, I'd been trying to cheer me up, and hopefully everyone else. The system itself was normally lethal to ship crews, and just sitting here doing nothing for 2 weeks had almost been too much for us all. The stress was killing us, not the least of which was it only needed something to go wrong and the system would kill us. But, strange as it seemed, none of us could stay away from the bridge for too long.
I'd even had a bed put in my ready room, and George was sitting the center seat while I got a few hours' shut-eye at irregular intervals so that a pilot had the controls if something really bad happened really fast. He'd actually begged me to let him be here as he was supposed to be on his own ship.
Tactical.
There was a series of specially shielded comnav sats all around the jump point, but not too close. The nightmares I'd been sharing with Amanda and Alicia hadn't contained much actual information, and we needed as much as we could get, as fast as we could get it. The nav map expanded to show only the death jump point. There was only one ship showing, and for now it was registering as a station.
"Bloody hell!" exclaimed Dick.
He was ignoring the nav map and looking out through the central view screen. Everyone followed his gaze.
"That's enormous," said Grace, stating the very obvious.
Whatever it was enormous. We could see it with the unaided eye, and we were only a third the way across the system from the famine jump point.
Score one for the nightmare. The first black dot was indeed big enough to see.
"I hope that's not a ship," said George, coming in late from a bed in the conference room.
He glared at Grace. She reluctantly rose from the helm position and let him have the seat there, moving to an empty one further back. He outranked her by a lot and was a much more experienced pilot than her. Besides, we'd already planned this. If something happened to me, I wanted an experienced pilot at the helm. Jane could still fly the ship, but something might happen to her, too.
"Jane, the Eagle has landed."
"Confirmed."
This was the prearranged signal she was sending, AI to AI, to inform the rest of our fleet that something had come through the jump point. We weren't in real-time range, given some of the peculiarities of the Pestilence system. They would be getting the same nav map we were, slightly delayed, but the signal was confirmation in case they didn't.
"Message received."
There was sticking your neck out, and there was hanging out over a precipice on a too-thin branch. Being here was a huge gamble, and whatever happened, the fleet needed every scrap of data we collected in case the branch snapped on us.
"Did that just..." started Amanda.
It had, and there wasn't any point in finishing the sentence. Now there were two dots on the nav map, and a second large shape was showing in the distance, although it wasn't quite as large.
"Did that thing just divide in two?" asked B.A.
"I don't think so," answered Jane. "The second one doesn't have anywhere near the same mass."
"How much mass are we talking about?" asked Aileen.
Jane was quiet for a half minute.
"The first one has the mass of a small planetoid, say roughly the size of Bad Wolf."
Even I was shocked. I'd often wondered what the size-mass limit for jumps was, but apparently there were none. "And the second?"
"Small fraction. Wait a sec while I see if one of the comnav sats can get us a proper close image."
We didn't have to wait long. The image flashed up on a side screen. By the time it did, there were three dots.
"Why am I reminded of peeling an onion?" asked Allison.
"Because it does look like that," said Amanda.
And they were right. It did look like on both sides of the original object half a layer had been peeled away. The two smaller ones moved away, and suddenly there were two more.
"I've got a bad feeling about this," said Amy.
She was at the back of the bridge, along with a cam operator and a half-dozen media types. I'd not wanted them, but it had been obvious not bringing them would damage the credibility of any claims we might make about what happened here. The media people had been chosen especially because they never agreed with each other. They were already doing sub-vocal commentary. This was all going live up the spine as fast as the comnav sats could move it. I hadn't liked it, but live coverage was the only way of getting everyone to take this seriously. It was conceivably possible that every human everywhere except Gaia had now stopped and was looking at a screen. Now there were nine, and as we watched, it became 11. The whole process seemed to be speeding up. I had a decision to make. Exactly when did I initiate first contact? 15. Did I wait until they approached us, assuming it was a they, or did I go there and make ourselves known before they became too organized? Or did I simply send our first contact message through the nearest comnav sat? "Any signs of hostility?" I asked Jane.
"None. No signs of life, even, although we have to assume there is some."
23. I stopped paying attention to the ever-widening area of black.
It's not happening like the nightmares seem to indicate, is it, John? Asked Alicia.
No, it's a lot slower than I expected. Is that good or bad? Asked Dick.
I looked at Jane.
I've no idea, but I think I know what's going on over there.
Do tell.
Closest analogy I can think of is a station jumped in, and carriers and battleships docked to it are steadily undocking. There was no response from anyone.
They jumped a whole fleet in as a single object, you think? I asked generally.
Why not? Said George. We've done it ourselves.
What does that tell us? Asked Annabelle.
Nobody answered her. Our eyes were going from each other to the nav map, to the view, and back again. I think I knew. And only because I knew something I'd not told anyone else. 13 knew, but hadn't said anything so far. He was in Jack's second officer chair, since Jack wasn't with us. For now, he was acting captain of Fearless.
13, are you just going to sit there? I asked him.
I guess not. You want to come with me?
The whole concept of me going with him horrified me. It shocked everyone else.
How safe is it?
For me, no problems. I can make another avatar if I need to.
I shook my head violently, like I'd been attacked by a demon. Normally, that was a bad thing. This time, I think it was just terror taking hold.
And me?
Do you think Kali would let you die just as things were beginning?
I didn't want to answer that.
You'll be fine, he went on quickly.
I nodded. Time stopped. In an instant, we were standing in space, far enough away from the ships for us to have some perspective, but close enough to see. They were not ships. Well, they were ships. My brain gibbered for a moment. This was bad, really bad. I could see the next layer in the process of peeling away. I could see what the layer was comprised of. Bad was the wrong word. It brought on a thought. What's at the center? I thought to 13. We shifted. Now we were standing on the innermost layer, except it wasn't a layer. Fuck, I thought. I hate it when I'm right. I could hear 13 chuckle. Inside, I thought. We shifted again. Black, all black, nothing but black. Home, James, but let's be gone about 10 seconds for the media. I was back in my chair, 13 standing next to me. Time started again. But for 10 seconds we were obviously not seen by anyone. It made sense. No time protected us both from pestilence, which used to kill anyone who entered here, albeit slowly. 13 had brought us back to the same moment we left, but taken us both out of phase, so it appeared like we were gone for 10 seconds. I closed my eyes and face-palmed. We came back into phase.
Was it that bad? Asked Annabelle.
Worse. Much, much worse.
How bad can it be? Asked Amy.
What did you see, Admiral?
Asked one of the media types. I swiveled my chair around to face them. Those now behind me, except for George, moved so they could watch my face. The last time we were down here, we missed a pirate battleship. They'd stolen a new set of shield emitters, which were supposed to have been tested for crossing the death system. Instead of engaging us as we jumped into Last Hope, they jumped out. We thought they'd been destroyed in the war system, but when we checked it about 5 months ago, there was no sign of it at all. I'd known there wouldn't be and had known it had made it across the death system, but it was something I hadn't wanted to get around. Now was different, though. We needed a scapegoat, and dead pirates were a good one. The battleship is over there. I waved at the hut. There was complete silence as everyone waited for me to continue. For those who just saw me vanish for a few seconds...
10, interjected Jane.
We have an ally with useful, if limited, abilities which enabled me to visit, I thought for a moment. Over there. At the heart of what looks like a gigantic ship is an asteroid. Embedded in the asteroid is the pirate battleship which fled past us. It looks intact, and it looks like it's providing shielding for the whole mass, allowing it to cross the death system.
You look like there's more to tell, said a different media type.
Yes. What we thought looked like an onion peeling turns out to be a huge mesh of linked ships.
How many?
Asked George.
What size?
Asked Lacey on a side screen from the cockpit of his camel. They looked fighter-sized to me, but each mesh looks to contain tens of thousands of ships. There were a number of shocked noises. I think I was too numb for noises.
"Are you saying there could be hundreds of thousands of ships over there?" asked Amy.
She was playing for the crowd, forcing me to be clear about what we faced.
"Potentially? I think they have 100,000 deployed already, and that's only the outer layers."
"Fuck," said the cam operator.
"Sorry."
"Fair summary, I thought," I said as calmly as I could.
"Was there anything you could do while over there?" asked Amy.
"No," said 13. "Time was stopped. Inside the battleship was complete black, so we couldn't see what's been done inside or who we're dealing with. Even if I went back now with time running normally, there is nothing I could do since there is no light of any kind in there."
"The darkness," said Amanda,
dropping it in on us at a dramatic moment. 3. "Apparently," I said.
"What are we going to do, Admiral?" asked Annabel.
I swiveled back to the front. The cam operator would have switched one of his views to a cam at the front of the bridge, so to the audience watching us at a short delay, I was merely being seen from a different angle. It had all been set up in advance, along with a lot of other things. We'd had 6 months, after all. It may not have been long enough, but it had been fully used.
"Is the first contact message ready to go?" I asked Jane.
"Confirmed."
This was a benign greeting from humans to our new friends in all known languages, including various forms of mathematics with which an intelligent space-capable species should be able to build a cross-reference for their own language. "Move the nearest comnav sat in as close as you can get. Let's see how close they'll allow it to come and what they do about it. At their first movement, broadcast the message."
"Confirmed."
A screen popped up with the vid from the comnav sat. It was approaching at a cautious speed. At first, it was as if they were unaware of it. Now we could see what I'd already seen, the meshes of huge numbers of fighter-sized ships, the next mesh peeling away from the huge mass.
"Distance?" I asked Jane.
10 kilometers. Seems odd they haven't reacted yet."
"Surely they have senses good enough to detect metallic objects," speculated George.
I noticed his hands were on the controls, ready to react at a moment's notice. Mine weren't. I was content to let him be the helmsman if he wanted to be. I trusted his reaction times.
"Or even movement," added Dick. "That's right on top of them, and they don't appear to be aware of it."
At 2 kilometers, Jane stopped the comnav sat. It sat there, observing the continued peeling of the next layer. We also watched as the other layers flattened out into huge mesh sheets. On the HUD, there was now a small area of black. The icons were now black dots, but they were so close together at this distance, it was just a black blob. In the view screen, the area of black was growing, nowhere near as fast as it had in my nightmares, but at a slow, steady rate. I weighed the decision and made it.
"Send the first contact message."
"Confirmed. Message sent."
There was no apparent effect.
"Did they get it?" asked B.A. "Unknown," said Jane. "It was sent over all known frequencies, including basic radio from 700 years ago, and frequencies above and below the human range."
"Nothing," I said.
"Are they blind, deaf, and dumb?" asked Grace.
There was no answer to that, but I thought of termites all of a sudden. "Jane, move the comnav sat in slowly. If you can, lay it up against something and repeat the message."
"Confirmed."
"You're going to tap it to them?" asked Aileen.
"Sort of. If they communicate using vibrations, we need to give them a vibration to be aware of."
"What use would that be?" asked Abigail. "You can't send vibrations across space."
"Could they read the solar winds?" asked Dick.
Everyone looked at him. He was the most avid reader of us, after me.
"They could be telepathic," I said, "in which case, until they can read a mind, we're not likely to be able to communicate."
"Depends on their distance capabilities," said Abigail.
"True, but they obviously can't detect us out here, so the range must be limited."
"Assuming our minds are compatible," added Dick.
I wondered what he'd been reading lately. He used to read detective stories, but he was sounding very rounded in science fiction all of a sudden. At 1,000 meters, we had an instant reaction. The comnav sat vanished, as did its vid feed.
"Jane?"
Rather than answering, she threw up the last image it had sent.
"Is that what it looks like?" asked Amy.
"Yes," I said. "Thousands of guns shot it at the same time."
"So," said Annabel, "hostile."
Afraid so, I agreed. Jane, foothold.
Confirmed. Received.
Foothold meant a hostile force had a beachhead in our space. I carefully thought through the next step, but there really was only one course of action.
Movement, said Jane suddenly.
The dots on the nav map suddenly became legion.
Expanding waves of small ships heading out on all vectors around the line our comnav sat went in on.
This wasn't a direct line to us, but it looked as if we stayed here we would be discovered even with their apparently lousy sensors. It meant they didn't know anyone was here, but they were looking all the same. So, if nothing else, there was either intelligence there or instinct. I wasn't sure which was worse.
Oh, shit, said Jane dramatically,
and the HUD vanished, the nav map vanished, and so did everything else electronic.
What the hell just happened?
Came a voice from the rear. We had lights, air, gravity, but very little else. Comms? I asked Jane.
Negative.
Shit, I said. George was a second behind me with the same word. Abigail was a second behind him.
Computer room is down, said Jane.
Down? How can it be down?
Repair droids on the way. John, I think the HUD software overloaded.
Huh? Came from somewhere behind me.
You remember during the Midgard War when we joked the HUD might overload because of all the missiles being fired at once?
Yeah, and?
I think it just did. Back then we were dealing with tens of thousands of dots. When those ship meshes suddenly became actual ships, one dot became tens of thousands, and all the original dots changed at the same time. I'm not sure the HUD was ever able to cope with hundreds of thousands of dots.
All the same, it shouldn't have caused the ship's computer to go futz.
No, it shouldn't have, said Abigail. Unless such a high number not only overloaded the variables inside the code, but did it suddenly, and in a way all the code became overwritten with data. But that shouldn't ever happen.
It did, confirmed Jane. How long to get it back up?
Could be half an hour. They not only have to check for damage, but I'm going to have to reload the last full backup.
Are you okay, Jane? Asked Amanda suddenly, looking very concerned.
This avatar is fine. It's autonomous. The ship me is gone, though, or at least is in storage and waiting for the hardware to be fixed so she can turn herself back on. If need be, I can clone myself back to the ship. Lose a few memories, but it's not a disaster for me.
Hardware damage? I asked her.
Confirmed. Apparently there was a power spike at the same time, and the core is actually damaged. We have spares, though. It'll just take time to fix.
Do we have the time? Asked Dick. Everyone looked to Jane.
I think so. They don't appear to be very fast.
So, bad sensors and bad engines? Asked George. How slow are they?
We don't have sensors now, so I can only go by their initial acceleration. Where we take 8 hours crossing this system, it looks like they'll take something around 85 to cross from jump point to jump point, less in smaller systems.
3 days, exclaimed George. Are they even a threat to us?
Numbers, I said quietly. All eyes came back to me. I thought some more. I understand the nightmare better now, I think. It was more symbolic than actual. When I saw the whole system go black in front of me, it was symbolic of the HUD going black suddenly, rather than the system slowly changing as they spread out. Even now, we could see a much larger area of space blacked out, although it was patchy, with color and suns shining through in some places.
John, said 13, they'd only just started deploying ships.
I shivered. We sat there for a nerve-wracking hour. It only took half the time to swap out the fried components. It wasn't like the early days of computers where you pulled a circuit board which changed a few dozen chips. Each component now was a miniaturized mega-computer in its own right, all interconnected. When something went inside them, you pulled the whole thing using a magnifying glass. It took specialist repair droids to work on computer cores. I had a serious bone to pick with Bob. This wasn't supposed to happen. The redundant backup should have kicked in at the very least. They hadn't. Hardware backup. Jane had to do a manual reload of the software. We held our collective breath, waiting for the word on her ship persona.
I'm back,
she said at last through ship comms. How are we doing, Jane? I asked.
Just completing the diagnostics now, but I need to make some changes before I can bring the nav and HUD back up. We are not, however, getting signals from most of the comnav sats, so I assume they've mostly all been taken out now.
Know what happened?
John, the HUD overloaded.
We know that.
At 1 million ships.
4. The only word to describe people's faces was horror. It was on mine as well.
We lost our ship ID, John, said Jane.
Hell.
What does that mean? Asked B.A.
It means our fleet thinks we bought the farm. Do we have full comms now?
Yes.
Send, sorry about that, technical difficulties.
Confirmed.
I opened a vid. This is Admiral Hunter in the Pestilence system. The question of if there is alien life in this galaxy is now answered. There is. Unfortunately, we have made contact with a hostile force. Our comnav sat was destroyed when it approached too close. As far as we can tell, they did not receive our first contact message. They arrived with an asteroid bearing a human ship, shielding giant meshes of smaller ships. Shortly after they took out the comnav sat, these large ship meshes became individual ships. Our nav software couldn't handle it, and we've spent an hour rebuilding our computer room. At the end of this vid will be a file for Hunter ships to replace their nav software with. Everyone else, before you come into sensor range of the enemy, you must upgrade your software to the specs included with this message. I paused for effect. The good news is they appear to be a long way behind us, technologically speaking. We don't know about weapons yet, but their sensors are practically useless and their ships appear to be slow by our standards. But this is small comfort. As of an hour ago, they had already deployed 1 million fighter-sized ships, and that was in less than a quarter hour of deployment. I paused again and looked around the bridge, and back to the cam. I say this to all government and military leaders on this side of Earth. Start evacuating the furthest ends of your space now. Latin sector leaders, you have the least time. While the African sector can flee through the Egypt system, your escape route is Brazil, and the Brazil system could be under attack in as little as 18 days if we are unable to slow them down. This is not a joke. This is real. Anyone on the Latin sector side of Brazil in 21 days could be there for the rest of their very short lives. I'm not exaggerating, and it could be sooner. Sectors on the other side of Earth, you have longer, but do the math. I took a breath. I'm ordering all Hunter ships to go to worst-case scenario orders. I suggest all other forces do the same. This is worse than I ever imagined. You all get some time. If we have their speed right, they'll be in the war system in about 5 days, and that's where you need to make them hurt. I could see some worried looks now. I think a few of them had an idea of where I was going. We're going in. Alarmed looks replaced concerned ones. I have no choice. The battleship they are using for shields must be destroyed. The best time to do it is now, especially while it's more vulnerable after unloading. We'll stay in touch as long as we can. If we fail, senior officers at each fleet location take command. You'll see the advance by when the comnav sats go down. Make them bleed. Hunter out. I looked at Jane. Attach your modified nav files and the specs for everyone else, and send it off as soon as you can.
Confirmed. Matter of minutes.
Get us moving. Maximum speed until we come to about 10,000 kilometers of the lead elements and drop down to something about twice their speed. I want to appear faster than they are, but not give them our true speed.
Confirmed.
Big Mother started accelerating. Without nav or HUD, this was a bit scary. I turned to Annabelle. General, I hate to do this to you all, but...
You want to suit it up, interrupted B.A.
Yes, I seriously regret only having two teams on board. But we'll have to make do with combat droids and Jane's suits. Prepare to repel borders. We have no idea what they'll do when we get in range, and they may go for capturing the first ship they come across.
They'll know our capabilities from the battleship, said George.
Maybe not, answered Dick. They seem to have used the shielding effectively, but they should have seen her engines as a gift and used the design in their own ships.
Too many to upgrade so fast, added Alana.
Or maybe the battleship was damaged by the time they took it, said Agatha, and they never saw its top speed.
We can but hope, I said.
Plan, boss? Asked George.
We make a straight run on the position of the battleship, which should still be close by the jump point.
We don't stop for anything and hope speed will keep them from hitting us too hard. We hit...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?